Hello everyone, this is Taylor Potter, and I'm your host for the Student Press Law Center's May podcast. On this month's episode, we're giving you an inside look at two stories we've been working on for the past several months. One on struggles student reporters face when trying to get concussion data from schools, and another on the difficulties of reporting on sexual assaults on college campuses. We're just touching on some of the big takeaways, so be sure to check out the full stories at splc.org for more. The links are in the show notes. I'm joined by my friend and fellow SPLC reporting intern, Gabriel Greschler. How are you, Gabriel?
I'm doing well, Taylor. This is going to be really exciting. This is going to be really fun to speak about both of our stories. I know that you and I have been working on these for several months now. And we've been doing dozens of interviews. We've been reaching out to a lot of folks, for our respective stories. So I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation. Thank you for having me.
So let's start off by talking a little bit about the story you've been working on for the last few months. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so I would say even before I joined the Student Press Law Center, I had always been interested in how sexual assault is dealt with at universities and colleges. I think that it's something that needs more attention in terms of investigative reporting. I think that it's something that just has been sort of not given enough attention. Specifically in terms of how these cases are covered. So whether that be sexual misconduct, sexual assault. So on top of that, I think the Me Too movement for me was really interesting, but not just the fact that it spawned a huge movement, but that journalism was really sort of the one of the many reasons why this movement took hold. But what I wanted to know through my reporting is where are we at right now? What's sort of like the current status for student journalists on reporting on sexual assault? So I sort of broke it down into three categories, and that is one: what sort of criticism does do student journalists take or receive, I should say, mm-hmm. when they are writing these stories on sexual assault? Second, I speak a lot about, in my story, I write a lot about how there are multiple universities now that have sued their own student newspapers.
Right.
And that's sort of like that could be a whole nother article. Mm-hmm. But one of the fears of that is that, most student newspapers don't have the legal backing that many universities have. Right. Obviously the costs and everything. So that's sort of the second bucket of challenges that student journalists run into. And the third is specifically the cost of open records. Mm. So there are universities that will charge hundreds, if not thousands of dollars for open records requests. While a medium-sized news outlet or large news outlet could cover those costs, usually it's pretty difficult for a student newspaper to cover these.
Who all have you talked to for this?
I would say a majority of the sources that I'm, interviewing for this article are the student journalists themselves, mm-hmm. who have been reporting on sexual assault. A really great example of one of those, I've interviewed about, 8 either editor-in-chiefs or editors-in-chief, or investigative journalists, student investigative journalists. A great example of a student who's really just leading the way on this reporting is a woman named Carly Lanich. She, you know, she's run into a lot of issues reporting on sexual assault. She, you know, would tell me that certain, you know, administrators didn't want to talk to her. But at the same time, she told me that it is getting a lot easier for her to report on sexual assault as well. She thinks that probably the Me Too movement is one of those reasons.
I don't know that there would have been the voices ready to step up and make that big public step of sharing their story before the Me Too movement.
After looking at this for so long, and you know, now that you're kind of at the point where the story's pretty much written now, we're just fine-tuning everything, what are some of your big takeaways on this topic?
I would say that probably the most, the largest sort of challenge that student reporters face now and that they will face in the future isn't really criticism, because criticism only goes so far, and it doesn't really, I think it makes the reporters want to do more reporting when they, when they get criticized. And the lawsuits that I spoke about, you know, those, even though they're happening now, it's not common for a university to sue their newspaper. It's sort of rare. I mean, it happened and it's happening right now, but it's sort of rare. But I think that the largest challenge that student reporters face now and will face in the future are public records requests and sort of the transparency that that student reporters are trying to request from their university, have transparency on their end, is just really difficult. And you know, between the costs of it, it can be really challenging. I think that another sort of takeaway that I found too was the effect of the Me Too movement on this whole sort of reporting. A lot of the editors that I spoke with, or reporters and editors that I spoke with, noted that the Me Too movement, you know, while it didn't change their tactics as a reporter, they continued to do their reporting just the same that they did before. They noted that sources were much more comfortable speaking with them. That, you know, folks were not afraid to speak up about, experiences that they had at on campus, of sexual assault. However, there is sort of an interesting takeaway as well with the whole Me Too part, is that I don't think that the Me Too movement has affected college campuses the same way that it hit the media, that it hit Hollywood, that it hit sports, that it hit, these other big arenas where this stuff has been going on. Mm-hmm. I was during my research, I looked, Vox put out an article recently talking about how out of the 200 people, high profile people, it's a lot, who have been, exposed by the Me Too movement, only 10 of them came from sort of the education field.
Oh, wow.
So you can see that, it hasn't had the effect, the same effect to education. So I would say those are sort of my takeaways.
let's shift gears a little bit.
For sure.
Yeah. And talk about concussions.
Yeah, another difficult topic to report on. So tell me, tell me about what you've been doing for the last couple months.
Our editor pitched us a story talking about she had heard of a lot of issues regarding or issues that student journalists have had in trying to get concussion data from schools. Seems like a very, you know, simple thing, you know, to ask a school how many concussions have football players or have athletes had this
season. So just total concussions in their athletic department.
Right. Well, some have not just that, but also, you know, can I get these numbers broken down by sport? You know, how many concussions for football? How many for field hockey? How many for basketball? And a lot of schools have been very unwilling to give that information. They've cited FERPA or HIPAA.
Can you explain for our audience who's not familiar with FERPA?
Federal privacy laws, FERPA being for education records, HIPAA generally being for medical records.
Okay.
They've cited both of those, saying that they're not able to give information that would identify these students. Of course, there's a big question as to whether or not concussion statistics would identify these students. But there were also complications about state policies on how do we keep up with concussions. So not just, you know, how we treat them, which has kind of become more standardized, at least at the high school and college level.
Yeah.
Over the last decade, but there's still a lot of ambiguity as to what should we do to keep up with how many are happening. Between those two things, okay, it's kind of been difficult for students to reliably get information in a lot of areas. So I started just like basic Googling, and I found two pretty interesting stories. One that was by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, in Georgia, and they looked at a lot of college programs, I think 62 college programs,
wow,
to see whether or not they track concussions and their numbers. And another by the student newspaper at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee,
mm-hmm,
that they essentially tried to get concussion numbers from every school district in Wisconsin, which is a very bold task. And in both those cases, they ran into pretty significant issues. With the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, I don't remember the exact numbers, but they had several schools, and these are high-profile schools that said they do not track concussions. Schools like LSU, you know, a very high-profile sports program, said they do not track concussions, which is kind of alarming. But there are several schools and big Division I schools that do not track concussions. So there's no NCAA requirement
that they do this. Wow.
With the story in Wisconsin, they sent over 200 requests, and they heard back from, I think they ended up getting the actual numbers from 19 of those. So they send out 200, they get 19. That's pretty abysmal.
Wow.
Most of those they didn't hear back from at all. They just did not respond. There were some where they got emails from athletic directors saying stuff like, you know, this is a threat. This is why no one trusts the media. Very ridiculous type stuff. There was one that they mentioned in their story. The cost of the records was about $2,000.
So who did you speak to for your story?
One of the first people I talked to was Dr. Monroe Cullum. He runs a program out of the University of Texas Southwestern in conjunction with the University Interscholastic League in Texas, which is kind of the body that oversees athletic and academic competition for the state. They started a central concussion registry, which athletic directors or trainers will send their concussion data to UIL, who will use that data to kind of affect their policies. So, like, if they have a lot of data that says, wow, the schools that use these types of helmets have really low concussion rates.
Yeah.
Maybe we should have a policy that says everyone should use this type of helmet.
Okay.
So I talked to him.
Yeah.
I talked to Jessica McBride, who is a professor at the university in Wisconsin. She kind of oversaw that project. Talked about the struggles, the significant struggles that they had trying to build that kind of database for high schools. You know, we talked about how different that reporting would have been if that had been in a state that requires schools to track. Wisconsin does not require schools to track concussions.
So which states do then?
That's a very difficult question.
Okay.
Because... So, there's no list anywhere that I could find. So, what I did is I started going through every state's major athletic oversight agency. So, like, for Texas, it's UIL. I went through every state, contacted all of these, or looked on their website. The vast majority, I could not find a concussion policy on their website. Or at least in terms of, like, data. Most had, like, a concussion protocol. And so what I ended up doing is contacting all 51 of these agencies, and I heard back from maybe a little more than 20, and I got a wide variety of answers. I should say that there are still like 28 plus that I don't know what exactly their policy is. But I found about 6 that have the central registries. Mm. I found a few more that have the optional registry.
Okay.
There are some that have no requirements at all. Some that require tracking. And then there's a lot of in-between type stuff that I don't really know where they fall. One that popped in my mind was Delaware. When I asked them about, do you require schools to track concussions? They said they should according to best practices. I don't know. They were very unclear as to whether or not it is a requirement versus a strong suggestion, but they did tell me what information they are required to track. So it sounds like it is a requirement. Others like Indiana, which has a registry, that when I talked to a person with the association overseeing their athletics, said that it's supposed to be mandatory, but it's just not enforced. Mm. And that part of the reason schools don't like to do it is because they're overly cautious. If a school suspected a concussion, they would report it to this registry as a concussion. So you would have these schools that might have only had 5 concussions, real concussions, but they reported 20. So it really kind of inflated their numbers and made them look bad. So a lot of schools were like, okay, we're not doing this anymore.
Wow.
So it is a kind of a weird situation in terms of the ambiguity in these state laws. Very few states seem to have just like a very cut and dry system. Let's talk about some of the big takeaways for your story on sexual assault. What do you think your story offers student journalists?
These folks who I interviewed, these student reporters who have undertaken the difficult reporting of sexual assault, I think that it can sort of open up an opportunity for a lot of student journalists to go, okay, this is difficult, but you know, it was much harder 10 years ago or 20 years ago to do this. And there are student journalists that are doing it, but doing it in a really professional way, and that are making policy changes too. That's the other part actually that I would maybe add is, a lot of these reporters, their schools have changed policy based on their reporting.
For mine, I think it's definitely a tool to help students looking into concussion numbers better understand the trouble they might have between the difference in tracking rules and schools misusing FERPA and HIPAA. There are a lot of problems these student journalists have to overcome. But hopefully this will help them find new avenues to get that information. And maybe we'll see more reporting on this topic from high schools and colleges.
Thank you so much for telling me about your story and you know, what you think people can learn from it. I think that's going to be exciting.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I think this is going to be a huge help, and hopefully, you know, people who read these stories will get something out of it, and it'll be able to help their reporting a little bit.
That's it for this month's SBLC podcast. If you want to learn more about the topics we discussed, the links are in the show notes. Thanks to Gabriel for chatting with me about his story. The music is by Joshua Empire. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time.